Hey everyone, before we open today's file, please make sure to follow us on Instagram at d.s.radio, where you can find all the images that go along with today's case. You can drop us an email at contact.dsradio@gmail.com. You can find all of our socials in the Linktree bio on our Instagram profile, including links to merch. If you're feeling especially generous, you can join our Patreon at patreon.com/dystopiansimulationradio, where you can get access to our exclusive Instagram page and make suggestions for upcoming episode topics that you would like us to cover. Speaking of Patreon, thanks to our Patreons, Riff Cult, Cropley Crab, Cash Broadus, Raspberry Jr., Jason R. Nelson, Creepy Paper, Jamie Sook, Michael Laughlin, Lindsay Keller, Mike Wright, Gria Weaver, Kelsey Carithers, Linz Gibbon, Drake Holvig, Only Child, Michael M, Wesley Akers, Riaz K, Emily Medeiros, Pip, Heather Wynn, Graves, Devin Sweatshirt, The Ordained Sinister Minister, and Philip Hoffman. Hi everyone, and welcome to Dystopian Simulation Radio. I'm your host, Linz.
And I'm your other host, Chris.
How's it going, Chris? What you been up to?
Pretty good, Linz. I have just been up to, you know, your regular bits and bobs, but...
Bits and bobs?
Bits and bobs balls. I was very happy. The finale of Star Wars Ahsoka was last night. I'm not going to say anything about it, other than... Okay. Will you please hurry up and bloody watch it so we can talk about it?
Well, now that it's over, I'll watch it. I've got to binge it, you know. You know I don't like waiting week by week, Chris. It's just not right.
It isn't, but spoilers are everywhere, man.
You know what? Amazingly, I've not seen anything at all. And that wasn't the case for the previous series that came out. So I don't know. I don't know anything yet. So I might try and watch it tomorrow, maybe. So then we can talk about it more quickly.
Give it a go. Let me know.
Yep. I'll dedicate my life to it.
For the next 24 hours.
Yeah.
So how are you doing?
Good. Saw some monster trucks. Don't know if I told you that last time.
No, you told me about the Swedish Museum of Disgusting Foods last time.
Yeah. Oh, okay. So I... embraced living in the countryside, and I went to a monster truck show.
Yeehaw! Was Truckzilla there?
No, but when I got there, I found out that it was like a small German family, like four generations of a random German family.
What the monster trucks were?
No, like the people, it wasn't just trucks, it was like random stunts with all types of vehicles. Mm-hmm. And it was like lots of different generations of this one German family who've just been doing that forever. And one of the members of the family is like three. And they had him almost go through a ring of fire on a small bicycle. Oh. Fortunately, he tried to take a big run up and he fell off his bike and started crying and didn't go through the ring of fire. And I was like, oh, thank God. Truly in the thick of it here. There was also a man from Georgia who just kind of reminded me of Paul Bearer. Only he just kind of did things like lay on a sheet of metal, got set on fire for 3 seconds, and then put out with like a blanket. Wasn't much of a stunt.
So what was he, just a hideously obese man with pale skin and a high-pitched voice?
He wasn't hideously obese, but he just had vibes. You didn't hear him speak, but I imagine he spoke like that. Well, that's probably the most exciting thing I've done since the last time I spoke to you, only because I've never done that before. And I was like, okay, I'll tick that off the list.
I don't think I've ever been to a monster truck rally, I don't believe.
Exactly, right? But I made the mistake of watching like a US monster truck rally on YouTube before I went. Oh. And that was insane. And it got my hopes up. I was like, why do people watch monster trucks? Then I watched it and I was like, oh my God, this is like my new thing. And I got really excited for the show. And then I got there and it was just like a really small production of random German men. But, you know, it was fun.
You got to try new things. Disgusting food museums, monster truck rallies, whatever comes along.
Exactly. But Chris.
Yes.
Before we get into the actual episode today, we must tell everyone about our links.
Yeah.
It was that Paul Bearer.
No, but I'll do the next bit as Paul Bearer if you want. I was just trying to do a Halloween thing. Head to our Instagram page, yes. And in the link in the bio, you'll find a double deep, double wide casket of links to our Patreon page.
I wish I had never asked. And the Instagram is d.s.radio, and all the visuals from today's episode will be there, and you can also chat with each other in the comments about your theories or what you thought about the episode and how great I am. Anyways, so Chris.
Oh yes, I completely forgot to say that bit, yeah.
Well, it's getting close to Halloween, Chris. It's October.
It is.
Thank God. Have you decorated?
My son has destroyed my house, but yeah.
Well, I was about to say I have my pumpkins out, but I will retract that and just say that, yes, I have decorated.
That's the OnlyFans link in the bio.
They're not pumpkins. We just censor everything with Chris heads. All right, Chris.
Yes.
I'm going to dive right into this episode today because I just honestly can't wait. So, allow me to set the scene for you. Late 1970s, England. 284 Green Street, a council house in Enfield, London. Long-time listeners should know by now that those of us residing in council houses need to sleep with one eye open, because poltergeists friggin' love council houses. And who could blame them? The main construction period for many council houses was from around 1919 onwards. The original homes are strong and sturdy, and they have a history to them and many, many previous occupants, some of which may never have left. Ooh. This seems to be true for today's case, Chris, which I'm sure you've guessed by now is the infamous Enfield poltergeist.
Yes. We have
more fanfare, please.
We've been threatening to do this for a while. It's been referenced many, many times.
Yep.
On the podcast. I have, so we shall deliver. I feel we should just give a little bit of context, though, for any of our listeners not from the UK. Council houses are houses that were subsidised by the, was it local councils or the government?
Well, they're called council houses.
Good point. By local councils. So essentially they were built in estates, and then they were managed by the council. People paid a small amount of rent, and then ultimately at some point they're able to purchase that house at a greatly reduced cost.
Mm-hmm.
So there used to be a very common fixture of the UK. There's now, sadly, not very many left.
This case was investigated between the years 1977 and 1979, and thankfully for us, it was covered extensively in the media. Listeners around the world may be familiar with this case from The Conjuring 2. Chris.
Yes.
I know you weren't happy with the evidence I presented to you in the Black Monk of Pontefract case, so I thought I'd come at you with a big hitter.
Okay.
And in this case, as you're likely aware due to how famous it is, there's photographs to look at, witness accounts to listen to, and even the voice of a poltergeist.
Oh,
did you know that?
I didn't, actually. So I've known about this case for a long time. I've forgotten largely about it, apart from the famous photographs of the girls, quote-unquote, levitating in the bed. I remember this was one of the things that struck my interest in the paranormal, though. I remember seeing a documentary that was either at least partially about this case when I was relatively young, and I remember it being quite terrifying.
Yeah, that's exactly the same for me. And when I started looking into it, I didn't realize how much I didn't know about this case. Like you, I'd just seen the levitation pictures. So yeah, they did scare me as a kid. Now they kind of make me laugh a bit, but there's a lot more to this case than I actually thought. So we'll get to all that later. But first, let's introduce the people involved. So we have two kind of main players in the story. We have the sisters, Janet Hodgson, who was 11 at the time, and Margaret Hodgson, who was 13. So we'll start off by taking a look at the sisters, and you can describe them to the listeners, Chris.
So you've got Janet and Margaret. Janet is the first photograph that you've sent me. She appears to be the younger of the two, is she?
Yes.
And she's got a sort of 70s bob haircut going on. With quite a lot of fringe. She's got some quite prominent teeth. She's got a very big smile on her face. She looks like a rather happy girl. And then Margaret she definitely looks a little bit older. She she's in a bit more of an interesting pose from the side, and she's got much more free, kind of almost hippie-esque 70s hair.
Yeah.
They both look very nice. Girls, they don't look, well, from where I know this case is going, they don't look the type to be making up stories about ghosties.
I thought you were about to say, they don't look the type to be demonically possessed.
Well.
You never can tell. So Janet and Margaret lived in the house with their mother, Peggy Hodgson, so single parent family. I think they had two brothers who aren't really mentioned too much in the case, and I believe one was off studying elsewhere. The father had divorced their mother and he had found someone new. So in 1977, things in the Hodgson household began to get, well, a bit spooky. A wardrobe in the children's room moved on its own. The children yelled to Peggy and said, "Mom, the wardrobe's moving by itself." So she comes into the room and she's like, "Don't be silly." And then she sees the wardrobe move by itself. She tries to push it back into its initial position, but she physically couldn't. So terrified, Peggy and the kids bolted from their home and ran across the street to the neighbor's house. And that is the house of Vic and Peggy Nottingham. This was the beginning of a series of alleged paranormal events that would grow in intensity over time. So afraid and at a loss for what to do, Peggy made a phone call to the police for assistance. Officers were sent to the address and they too witnessed what they believed to be paranormal activity and went on the record saying that they had seen things they could not explain. They checked around the home and could find no reason for the noises, so unable to offer any further assistance like arresting the furniture or whatever you do when you're a police officer called out to a paranormal situation, they just left. But don't take my word for it, Chris. Let's hear it straight from the Bobby's mouth.
It came off the floor, or nearly a half inch, I should say, and I saw it slide off to the right, about 3.5 to 4 feet before it came to rest. I checked to see whether or not it could possibly have slid along the floor. I placed a marble on the floor to see whether or not the marble would go in the same direction as the chair did, and it didn't. It didn't roll at all. I checked for wires under the cushion of the chair, and I could find no explanation at all.
It's been a while since we've had, I think the last time we had a police one was our first episode. Well, she was terribly well spoken for a police officer, wasn't she?
Yes.
I walked in and I saw it levitate at least 2 inches from the ground. I checked for wiles. But there were no wiles.
What do you think about what she saw though, Chris? What she reported to see and went on camera to tell the world?
I mean, I think that's very bold of her to go on camera to report that. I mean, we were just talking off air there that we very rarely have police going on record and giving a statement, especially to cameras, about a paranormal incident or a UFO incident or anything else. So this is fantastic footage to see. She seems to be thoroughly and utterly convinced by it. She's reporting it. Yep, this happened. I was in there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
A chair moved. I had a look around to see if there's any wires or anything going on, and there wasn't. So, my perp is a ghost.
But what do you think, Chris? Do you think that there could be something to that? Do you think it was just some kind of trick? Because to be honest, sometimes I watch like a basic magic trick and I know that it's not really happening and it's just a trick, but I can't explain to you what is happening. But I just know it's a trick. So I'm not 100% sure that not being able to explain a thing, in this case anyways, equals poltergeist activity. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, you need to be able to completely remove any reasonable doubt from the situation. I mean, someone's always going to come out and go, it was magnets.
How do they work?
Yeah. There's always going to be, you know, something with magnets, or there was wires, or there was something going on. So I don't think this in itself is enough proof to say definitively there was a ghost. However, just as we talked about in the Bob's Balls episode, our very first episode, this is a policewoman. She is not somebody who will be readily going to be going on camera and saying, yeah, there's a ghost in there. I saw it with my own two eyes. She is going to try and take a logical approach. It's her job to do that. And she is thoroughly not doing that. So there's some kind of weight to what she's saying. This isn't one of the family members. It's definitely not a child who's saying this, but this is a professional investigator saying that there may very well be a ghost.
It certainly makes the case more interesting, because right off the bat, that's what we have. So the story starts off kind of tame, of course, as it usually does in poltergeist cases, but then it starts to get a bit batshit. So together, Chris, you and I must determine if this case is a legitimate example of paranormal activity or a total hoax. We must come together and figure this out, Chris, because I need an answer on this one. There's so much debate. And now that I've properly looked into it and I'm going to present this evidence to you, at the end, I want us to come to a conclusion. And I think I know what I believe, but
okay,
we will get through this. So
well, I want to believe, Lynn's just convinced me.
Thankfully for us, there are some reporters, paranormal investigators, and a self-taught American husband and wife demonologist team involved, the Warrens, who weren't really that involved, to be honest with you.
They'll claim to be.
So we have a lot of information and research to go on. So after the police were unable to help, Peggy called the Daily Mirror.
Oh,
they sent out a photographer called Graham Morris to check it out, and he also experienced paranormal activity. Many people who came to investigate reported experiencing strange things that they could not explain. So some of the activity reported, Chris, if you would be so kind to read.
Of course, my horse. Furniture and objects being hurled across the room, including a Lego brick that hit Daily Mirror photographer Graham Morris in the head. I mean, you can't blame a ghost for that. Others were also hit by rogue flying Lego pieces. Tapping, knocking, and thumping noises. A pool of water appearing in the kitchen. The toilet flushing on its own, and a toilet brush flying off by itself. The couch being thrown into the air and flipped. Spontaneous fires around the home. A dog barking, despite no dog being present in the house. Objects thrown and moving around on their own, being hot to the touch. A low growling voice that would speak and answer questions. The sisters levitating around their bedrooms, horizontally, which was seen by a neighbor who was looking up at the window from outside the home. Dirty old bastard. Events were also witnessed by friends, family, and others who came to investigate.
Pretty hardcore stuff seen by those living in the neighborhood and visiting the home, wouldn't you say, Chris?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, this goes from some Lego bricks being thrown around, which, to be fair, is a daily occurrence in my home. Some random tapping and knocking noises to then we've got some, you know, elemental things happening, pools of water, fires starting. But then it's becoming much more malicious than that. You've got, objects being hot to the touch. You've got the sisters levitating around the room. And the craziest one of all, in my own opinion, is a low growling voice that speaks and will freely answer questions.
Yes. Now, clearly, this is part of the case that you don't remember. But it's actually kind of the main element that people remember this case for.
Is this, am I right in saying, does the voice, the ghost, speak through the youngest child?
Exactly. He speaks through Janet. And we will definitely get into that, Chris. And we will hear this yes. poltergeist as well.
It's all coming back to me.
Again, another beautiful croon from Chris there. A little bit of reverb on the end of that one. I like that. But yeah, another one that I thought was creepy is the dog bark, but no dog.
Yeah.
Like on paper, when you read that, it's more scary than when you hear it, I think.
It is. I mean, the thing is, it depends how close it is. Because if there's like a dog barking in the next room, that's pretty creepy. But if there's a dog barking outside, then again, you can rationally explain it. Oh, well, there's a dog that isn't normally there that's there or whatever.
Well, believe it or not, Chris, this very spooky case didn't involve a dog barking in the distance somewhere. It was in the house.
Shock, horror.
You were like, well, you know, it doesn't scare me if there's just a dog somewhere. Well, obviously. Oh, Chris. Okay, so let's have a look at some pictures of documented evidence. Super compelling evidence, Chris. Are you ready?
Yes, I am so, so ready.
Here it comes.
Right, so I'm looking at the first of these two images, and these appear to be scans of a book.
Yes.
So just working my way left to right, top to down. The first one appears to be something on the side of a kitchen counter. Is that something burned?
Charred pieces of paper.
Oh, okay. So we've got charred pieces of paper first on the side of a kitchen table next to the sink. And then there's a close-up of them beneath that. There seems to be a piece of paper and some material as well. On the right-hand side at the top, we've got some burned £1 notes. And beneath that, we've got burned matches, or other matchboxes that seem to have set on fire, which is probably the most likely of all of these things to randomly set on fire, but still creepy.
So, how are you feeling about this visual evidence, Chris? Poltergeist?
I mean, again, we've got some things that are burned, so they could have been done by anybody.
Yeah.
And especially that probably the most incriminating thing here is that there was a book of matches found. And, you know, that's kind of like a smoking gun right here.
Yeah, when you think a demon setting fire to things, you think that it's just looking at them or touching them or willing them to burst into flames. But then you see the big box of matches.
Hellfire and brimstone, not swan's matches.
All right, so not convinced by the burn.
There's a second page.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. So as well. So the first one on the second page is some bent spoons.
Yep.
Which is, as we all know from Michael Jackson's best friend Uri Geller, can be done by anybody. Is the middle one? Is that a microphone?
Exactly. That's like recording equipment from either the BBC or some channel who came to interview them, and the ghost right. used to damage equipment, recording equipment and right. things.
You can see the part of the connector's bent on it. It doesn't necessarily look broken, but it's certainly damaged. There's then a scrawling on the back of the door. Is it scrawling or is that in tape?
That's tape on the back of the bathroom door that was discovered by Margaret, I believe.
Okay. And this reads, "I am Fred." And then on the right-hand side of this paper, we have got is that a rock of some description?
Bunch of rocks.
Bunch of rocks, which seem to have been thrown around the house along with Lego bricks. So there's quite a few stones, some that have been split open. Yeah, there's a whole assortment, a potpourri, a veritable smorgasbord of bizarre items in this home. once again, if we put our skeptics hat on, though, fires can be started by anybody with a book of matches. Spoons can be bent by even young children. That isn't really what I'd call damage to an equipment. It's just a little bit off center.
Yep.
I Am Fred is written in tape. Again, anyone's got tape. And rocks, well, you can find rocks just about anywhere.
Yep, you can find them in your back garden in the shape of little men's heads that curse you for all eternity.
Can do. You can find them at movie premieres. you can find them in wrestling rings. You can find them just doing general good things around the neighbourhood because Dan the Rock's a good guy.
So, Chris, is that evidence compelling enough to make you believe that there was a demonic or supernatural entity in the Hodgson's home?
No. This is better than what was in the monk episode, definitely.
Mm-hmm.
But if this is a meal, a paranormal meal, this is very much the garnish on the side. So this is telling me this is all kind of stuff that's adding together to the paranormal ensemble, but it is not necessarily making me believe that there is a poltergeist in action here.
Fine. I'm not worried because there's more. There's more, Chris. And it is compelling. Okay. I'm just starting off easy here. And also, you hungry? All the food comparisons are making me feel like you didn't use that Pizza Hut code.
I haven't. If it lasts 24 hours, I might do tomorrow, potentially.
Yep. You've got to get it in there.
That's what she said.
British paranormal investigator Maurice Gross was very involved with the case. He spent a chunk of time in the Hodgson home trying to get to the bottom of whether or not, in his opinion, this was a genuine paranormal case. So first, let's have a little look at Gross, because we want to know who we're talking about here, Chris. If you could just describe him to the listeners.
Of course. Okay, so Maurice is a ladies' man. Yeah, Maurice is clearly beating him off with a stick. His mustache is glorious. So I'll come back to that at the end. But he is he's balding. He's got a chrome dome, but on the sides he does have a little bit of hair there. He's got big 1970s, 1980s style glasses.
Mm-hmm.
He is in this picture, he's relatively old. I'd say he's in his late 60s at earliest here, and he has got a lovely military mustache, one that curls up at the sides. He looks like he wears a suit to the gym.
Who was that guy in the Loch Ness Monster case? He had an amazing name. He looks like him.
Oh,
Weather. Weather something. Oh, gosh.
Marmaduke. Marmaduke Arundel Duke Weatherall.
Yes, he looks kind of like him.
He does, actually. You are right. He's a man from another time.
Yep. So we have some footage of one of the incidents involving Gross.
The light plug was pulled from the socket three times after that. Then, after a period of watching and waiting, something even stranger happened.
There's that shaking door. Oh. What's that, little mum's laugh? Oh, what's that?
The slipper was thrown across the room and hit the door as I was holding the door.
My one.
As I, the white slipper hit the door as I was holding the door.
He hit me on the leg. Where's the other one?
The other one's over here.
Okay, Chris. So there is an example of paranormal activity caught on camera. What do you think?
I mean, yeah, definitely. That is, and again, this is stepping up the evidence here. But there's nothing to say that somebody didn't just lob a shoe at this poor man's mustache off camera. I mean, this is all fairly bog standard by this point. This didn't really differentiate itself from any of the other paranormal cases that we've seen. I mean, even down to the writing on the wall, except this time it's not a French king that's doing it in a British house. It's just somebody called Fred.
Yeah. Or is he called Fred, Chris? Is he? So, while Maurice was in the house, he experienced some spooky happenings, including dog barks as well as other strange noises. The thing is, these noises seem to be coming from Janet.
So, this is now throwing shades of Geth the Talking Mongoose. Go and yes. check that out in our archive. And in that, this is again a paranormal event of some description. In this case, you know, it's a ghost. In that case, it was a talking mongoose. But it all centered around essentially there being some unseen presence. The mongoose was in the walls. And it would talk and answer questions. There was a young girl involved in both of these cases.
Yes.
In fact, all of the paranormal cases we've looked into have involved young girls.
So far.
Which in itself is a trope. Mm-hmm. Especially, how old was Janet?
11.
11. So, yeah, there's a big trope going on in movies a lot of the time about girls on the cusp of puberty and everything like this. And then that somehow invites demons or ghosts into the home for whatever weird reason that might be. But that's a trope. But we're seeing this here. We're seeing a young girl who, for whatever reason, this ghost seems to be especially drawn to.
Yes, but in this case, we have the voice, a recording of the voice. But first, let's talk a little bit about the kind of things that the poltergeist said and who he said he was.
Okay.
So a voice would come through Janet. That of what sounded like an elderly man with respiratory issues. And soon it began to answer in words and sentences when Maurice Gross asked it questions. So the poltergeist actually identified itself on December 12th, 1977. And it said...
Just a dirty phone call now.
My name is Bill Winkins, and I come from Durrance Park, and I am 72 years old. And I have come here to see my family, but they are not here now.
You have just scared the absolute shit out of me. I'm in a dark room. And that's scarier than any footage I watched when I was recording this.
You know what would have been... more scary? If he'd come out and gone,
a little bit of Monica in my life. A little bit of Rita by my side.
Did you read about Stephen King having an obsession with that song and his wife almost divorcing him?
I did.
Did that hurt your throat to do that?
It absolutely ruined it. I'm not particularly, I'm not 100% at the moment. My voice is a bit fucked and I believe I've just absolutely buggered it.
Well, hopefully that'll work on the next sentence that I have for you to read in the exact same voice. So the following day, Bill, through Janet, said,
I went blind and I had an hemorrhage and I fell asleep and I died on a chair in the corner downstairs.
You're actually scaring me. I think I need to turn a light on.
The night light on.
Apparently, a William Wilkins did live at the residence around the 60s and earlier, of course. Although he had died when he was 61 and not 72, he also didn't die of a hemorrhage, but a blood clot.
Okay.
There's a cemetery near the Enfield haunting home called Durance. However, Bill Wilkins wasn't buried there, apparently. Now, there's this website I want to shout out called xenophon.org.uk, and the guy who runs it is called Roger James Morgan. He actually tracked down Bill Wilkins' grave and shared some images of it on his website, including this death certificate. So if you're interested in knowing more about the whole Bill angle, that's the place to go.
Okay.
But there isn't much about that elsewhere, but I just wanted to shout that out for people who really want to, you know the facts of this case, because it's been mixed up a lot with the whole Conjuring 2 movie.
So, sorry, can I just ask a couple of questions there? So
mm-hmm.
I suppose if you do this logically then, okay, let's just presume yep. for a moment that this is Bill Wilkins speaking through Janet. Mm-hmm. I suppose you might not know where his body's buried if his spirit has remained in the home.
Well, that's a good point.
He might just believe, well, I was probably in Durance Park, because that's the local cemetery. Just guessing, but could he have been 72 at the time? So like he died in his 60s, but his spirit was 72?
He would have been closer to 74, 75, I believe, at the time. Okay. So not quite.
Not quite. Like, close enough. And then, again, I suppose, unless you get, when you die, you know, Gabriel's there or something and goes, yes, so you died of a hemorrhage. You might just guess what you died of and you might be like, yeah, I guess it was a hemorrhage probably. He's not a doctor.
I mean,
he's a blind man who sits in a chair.
What do you think about that, though? I mean, Janet was the one. Well, if you don't want to believe that she was channeling Bill, she's the one saying it. So, where do you think she could have got this information?
I mean, in the '70s, it would be very, very difficult for a young child to find out the name of previous occupants.
Mm-hmm.
And any
would
kind
it?
I think so. Yeah.
I mean,
unless
you move into a place, and what's the thing that you're most curious about when you first move into a place?
Yeah. Well, I guess so. But if you think about that, I mean, if he was closer to 75, that means that mm-hmm. there was 10 plus years. So Janet, if she was born, would have been about one at the time when we moved in. So I guess she wouldn't have paid much cause to that. There's always ways to find out. I'm not saying it's impossible. I'm just saying it's rather impractical for a 11-year-old girl to know or find out this information without the help of somebody at least a little bit older. So either a sister, one of her brothers, or a mother or father.
Well, it's also possible that she could have just heard the neighbours talking about him also, don't you think?
I mean, yeah, that's always a possibility as well.
Yeah, that's kind of what I lean towards too.
I guess we'd have to start getting into motives though, and what she wants out of it, and why is she doing this? You know, it's a rather bizarre thing for a girl to do, to hear about a dead neighbour and think, oh, right, that was a missing element for my massive poltergeist hoax that's going to involve levitation, shoes being thrown, and also my latent ventriloquism ability that I've hidden from everybody until now. That's the ticket.
All right, I know you've been waiting for it, Chris.
Mm-hmm.
So let's listen to the voice of Bill through Janet.
I've never been able to forget that voice. He called himself many names, but mostly Bill or Fred. I still listen to the 180 hours of tapes I recorded during the investigation.
Bow, 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 bow. chest, his dialysis tray. Gravity, melody, merrily, merrily, love, he got the tray. Now, f***ing smile.
This voice is coming from an 11-year-old girl.
Well, perhaps, Guy, perhaps you've got something to say to them.
Yeah.
I'd like to know how you make this noise without bashing Janet's vocal cords to pieces. If I do it for half a minute, I get a sore throat.
Whose choice is here? And we found that on analysis, the voice was not made by the larynx, the voice box, but by the false vocal fold, which is above the larynx. And you only use that when you lose your voice and you talk like that. Well, if you talk like that for more than a couple of minutes, you start getting a sore throat. Talk like that for 5 minutes or so and you're going to start doing damage to your throat. And yet this voice used to speak up to 3 hours at a time. Not continuously, of course, but up to 3 hours at a time without the girl showing any distress at all. Absolutely remarkable.
Okay. What did you think
well,
of that?
Well, the first time she said yeah, I wasn't very convinced because it did just sound like somebody going, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But...
right, yeah.
when he saw her, you know, her vocal cords moving, through her throat, that is, and you saw it on the second bit. I couldn't quite make out what Bill was saying through Janet, but he kind of went, and then...
Yeah.
Then they started to respond, then the clip cut off. It sounded a lot more convincing at that point. Again, it would have been... I would imagine it would be quite difficult for... a young girl, let alone anybody, I mean, quite difficult for anyone to throw their voice. She's got her mouth, she's got a smile on her face, kind of. But that's just due to her teeth, really. So it's,
yeah, it was mentioned that because her teeth protruded slightly back then,
mm-hmm.
that it, as you can see, it seems like it would be easier to hide sort of a bit of mouth movement with that. The upper teeth kind of show a lot. You'll see this in the pictures, listeners, but at the time, like when she was a kid, her teeth protruded a bit more and you could kind of hide a lot of ventriloquism behind that in a way. You know what I mean? Even if you're not quite good at it.
He certainly could do, but she's also being shot in quite tight close-up by cameras.
Yeah.
So it's more convincing than you think it is listening to this. Go and check out the YouTube videos. We'll post them on the Patreon and elsewhere.
Yeah.
You'll see. It's definitely not something that you're going to leap to the conclusion and go, this is definitely 100% not somebody doing some ventriloquism, but it's a lot more convincing than you might think it is.
It's very creepy, like the little growl that she does. It was actually like a poltergeist from a movie. It really was.
Mm.
That gives me the chills.
And we got to hear a lovely rendition of Row, Row, Row Your Boat, which I... I'll happily be thinking about the next time I'm singing that to my son. so, yeah, he's obviously got a bit of humour to him, does War Bill here, by singing a children's nursery rhyme and then telling everyone to F off afterwards. It's really interesting here that, you know, for up to 3 hours at a time, this voice was emanating from Janet. And... as rightly pointed out there, it's really difficult to use that false fold at the front of your vocal cords. You do need to be using your vocal cords. So one of two things is happening, I suppose. Either she has got some kind of genetic abnormality where she can use her false folds a lot more in her throat, much more than a normal person is able to therefore continue on with this voice, or there is something paranormal going on.
Well, Janet did say that she would feel cold hands on her neck when Bill was speaking and seemed to imply that she was being used as some kind of conduit for the poltergeist to speak through. So we have a little quote from her here about what it felt like and why she thought it was happening. If you could just read this for us, Chris.
I felt used by a force that nobody understands. I really don't like to think about it too much. I'm not sure the poltergeist was truly evil. It was almost as if it wanted to be part of our family. It didn't want to hurt us. It had died there and wanted to be at rest. The only way it could communicate was through me and my sister.
Janet later said of the voices that she produced, she said, I knew when the voices were happening, of course. It felt like something was behind me all of the time. They did all sorts of tests, filling my mouth with water and so on, but the voices still came out. So on that note, Chris, it probably makes sense to you why I asked you to bring a glass of water today.
See, I thought you were just going to like pull a fastball and be like, and look to your right, Chris, there's a full glass of water.
Damn it, I should have done that in the Black Monk of Pontefract case. But yes, first, Chris, mm-hmm. I would like you to try to do Bill's voice.
Yeah.
As you heard it through Janet. And then I want you to try to do it with the water okay. in your mouth, which apparently Janet could do.
Okay, so I'll do that. Yeah, I'm going to use I went blind and had a hemorrhage line from before.
I thought you said hemorrhoid for a sec.
I went blind and had an hemorrhoid.
Yeah, but you know, like really remember how she did it.
I'm going to remind myself.
Yeah. Have like watch it over and then try and recreate that voice without moving your mouth.
Oh, well, right. That's very difficult to do. I mean, I can't. I've got no talent when it comes to ventriloquism.
It wasn't bad. It wasn't bad. Like, I could make out the words. Like, one more shot.
I had an urge. And I had a and died on a chair in the corner. There's
it. It sounds like Cartman.
I went blind. Hear me.
All right, Chris, so... It's pretty difficult, but, yeah. You know, you've had no practice. Janet might have been practicing that for a year before she pulled it out of the bag. So why don't we try with the water in the mouth?
Okay. So I'll just say at this point, that thing about the vocal folds at the front is very true. I'm really hurting right now. And as I mentioned, I'm not very well anyway.
No. Worst time to ask you to do any of this, honestly.
Here goes for water. Oh. Right, once again.
I have a glass of water here and I'm going to give it a shot. Okay. Here we go. Oh my God. Okay. I think if I try that again, we might lose me. So, Chris, amazingly, Janet could do this, but everyone in the room had to turn around while she did.
Oh, for fuck's sake. I tell you what, Lynn's right. I'm going to do this again. Yeah. Do me a favour and just turn around.
Turn around?
Yeah,
turn okay. Around. Right, one second.
I'm going to do it again. Just going to...
Okay, have you got water in your mouth?
Yes, I'm on the floor.
Okay.
Bullshit. That is a big, big red flag. I can do this paranormal thing, you know, but just everybody has to just look in the other direction while I do it. I will definitely make this water turn into wine. If you'd all just turn around for 5 minutes, and I'm definitely not popping out to Tesco.
So I think Gross may have had a bad case of want to believe, because even though he admitted to rumbling the sisters when they were playing little tricks on him, he said he still believed that the haunting was legit and that the kids were just being kids. Although, saying that, it's possible there could have been these unexplainable events happening and also kids playing around and performing their own versions of these events.
Yeah, that's true.
I know that Gross lost his daughter some years ago in a car accident, so that might have something to do with it. Mm. But Chris, what kind of tricks did the kids play on Mr. Gross?
So I'm guessing this is like a proto Home Alone. So they were like, you know, tying buckets of paint to strings and pushing them down the stairs. Or there was, you know, bricks being dropped on his head. A tarantula let out.
No, instead of a paint bucket, it's like a paint bucket with a sheet on it.
Ooh. So according to this that you just sent me, though, here,
yep,
they hid his tape recorder from him and said the poltergeist had taken it. The device, however, was recording the entire time, so when Gross played it back, he could hear them hatching their plan. She was again caught in the act on a recording, at this time on video camera, that had been set up in the opposite room as she bent a bunch of metal spoons and attempted to bend an iron bar. They were also caught making tapping and thumping noises on the ceiling with the handle of a broomstick.
Huh.
I mean, this is really undercutting the validity of this case. If you've got, you know, an active agent in the house who is trying to... I've lost my voice now.
Damn it, Bill.
If you've got, you know, an active agent in the house who's trying to play tricks and to actively make it appear like there is a poltergeist doing things, it greatly undercuts any other evidence that may point towards there actually being a poltergeist.
Yeah, I mean, it's a massive shame, really. I mean, Gross must have felt inside, like, I know he was probably just trying to save the investigation by being like, well, you know, kids are still kids, they play little tricks and stuff, so maybe they were just copying the poltergeist and trying to make some events where there wasn't any, so I had something to, or just to entertain themselves, you know, but honestly, it just kind of muddies the waters.
Yeah. It's funny, because this kind of mirrors the...
Battersea.
Battersea. There's a guy in there, he's not called Tubbs or something, is he? But
Tubbs!
Tubbs. Oh, it's Chibbit. Chibs, that's it. Chibs. This sort of mirrors the case of the Battersea poltergeist, where there's a young girl in that, and the research of Harold Chibbit, known as Chibs, who also, if memory serves me right, I think he became to see that girl as almost like a surrogate daughter and wouldn't even entertain the idea that she could possibly be making any of it up at all in that case. So it's funny how invested, particularly an older man, gets in a sort of fatherly figure in these cases and becomes obsessively involved in the case to the point where potentially there may be a lot of evidence to the contrary, but they still want to believe.
Yeah, and with Chibs, he wanted to believe so badly that he actually stopped sleeping in the same room as his wife. He was going to France to find out more about...
Yes.
Who was it?
That was it. He took them on a lovely romantic getaway and then revealed that they were going to France so that he could research
Louis the
27th or whatever it was.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the length some of these people go to is just next level.
Mm.
I think they get really invested and they want to be the one. You know, they get really close to a case and I don't want to call it a delusion, but it's sort of like
it's an obsession.
Some kind of, like a sunk cost fallacy thing where they get really invested and they put so much time into it that they can't let it go.
Yeah.
They want it to be real.
Yeah, well.
Otherwise, it's like wasted time.
It's the classic, I want to believe. Yeah.
In the 80s, Janet said of the tricks that her and her sister played on Gross, they said, "Oh yeah, once or twice we faked phenomena just to see if Mr. Gross and Mr. Playfair, who was another investigator, would catch us. They always did." So that's what she said about performing these little tricks as if they were some kind of test. Which is convenient.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is a very convenient excuse. I think what you ideally want is there to be no accusations to be thrown at anybody in the house because they're so infallible for whatever reason. But in this case, it really doesn't seem to be. They're freely admitting that they did try it on and try and make stuff up. One thing that I always remember from this case, I don't know if you're going to talk about it or not, but is the photographs.
That's what we're going to get into next, Chris.
Well, I just remember them being not very shocking. Them looking like some girls jumping up and down on a bed.
Exactly. And that is what we're going to look at now, Chris. We have some examples of the levitation series, let's call it. And just as you said, I think if you even put these pictures in order, it's just a girl jumping. Like even the leg muscles, the position and everything, it's just someone leaping into the air.
Yeah. I mean, looking at this picture, these pictures here, they just look like
silly.
Somebody is jumping into the air, being very silly. I mean, they're even jumping into the air in a way that they would land on their feet.
Yeah, exactly.
So not flinging themselves or anything. They're being very safe about it. The last picture is absolutely ridiculous. it's just two girls with their legs up on the ground going, oh, no.
Exactly.
The most terrifying thing about this picture is the way that the wrinkles have formed on that poster of, I think it's Steve McQueen in the background. And it sort of makes him look like Emperor Palpatine as a pinup model.
I love the way that, like, okay, so Janet is on the room, the side of the room with like the bare walls, and Margaret's on the one that's got all the posters of middle-aged men. But yeah, these pictures are just, they're silly. I mean, I've seen these around since I was a kid. They're very famous and they've been republished in so many paranormal books and whatnot. I do believe that it was dark in the room and this is like a camera flash.
Yeah.
So the lights aren't on, which I didn't know before, because I was like, I always thought that this was just like, you know, the lights were on and someone was watching them levitate and taking these pictures, but this is like a dark room with the flash when they heard like movement or something.
Mm-hmm.
There is more pictures than what I've sent you, and when you line those up, it's sort of the motion of a child jumping. So
yeah, it ain't very, it's not very convincing, is it?
No, not at all. I mean, it's doing nothing for making me believe in this case, and I think, you know, where I fall on the scale of believability here.
Yeah.
So there are some great articles out there written about this case through a more psychological lens. And one of them was published in The Guardian in 2015, and it was titled The Enfield Poltergeist, A Skeptic Speaks by Deborah Hyde. And it points out that the new types of phenomenon began to happen in the Hodgson home after reporters or paranormal investigators mentioned it. So, for example, the poltergeist had begun, quote-unquote, speaking soon after Maurice Gross said to Janet that all they needed now was for, quote, the entity to speak. The same apparently happened about the appliances bursting into flames and all that. Like, apparently a reporter had mentioned that it was kind of a usual occurrence in poltergeist cases. So that started happening soon after. So it was kind of like all these different investigators coming in had kind of gone, oh, has this happened? Because, you know, usually in poltergeist cases, this happens. Oh, has it spoken yet? Because usually, you know, and then more things would start to happen. So it's kind of like they were unintentionally being fed sort of ideas for this.
Yeah.
I don't want to say it's a hoax, but it's like they were being fed ideas and going, oh yeah, now he needs a voice. And if he needs a voice, then he needs a name. If he needs a name, who could that be? You can kind of see how the kids' brains might have been led to actually concocting this. If you look at it, if you sort of reverse engineer the story,
yeah.
I mean, it kind of seems like it makes a bit of sense how it came to be.
Yeah, I mean, kids, especially, I mean, even kids of 11, you know, they don't have the full power of rational thinking,
mm-hmm.
and to not be obviously led by suggestion.
Mm-hmm.
So the fact that, you know, somebody's saying, oh, all we need is a voice, and oh shit, that's right, the voice, don't, yeah.
Yeah.
Let's do the voice. that makes complete sense to me. It's just a shame that nobody had the idea of going, oh, all we need now is them to is to leave money out. Oh, that's what poltergeists do, isn't it? Money and alcohol, isn't it? Yeah. We'll be back tomorrow and see if there's any there.
Peggy, the mom, remained in that house until she died. Because there was theories that she wanted to get a different council house, because maybe she wanted to move away from the area that her ex-husband lived in and all that, but she never actually switched houses or moved again, so they didn't seem to get much from it, but I'm not exactly sure how much they profited. I know that Janet, as an adult, was really... She didn't like to do many interviews. When she did, her face was kind of half in shadow and stuff, and it was quite hard to get her on TV and things like that. So, okay, so I have a little bit of my own input here before we sort of wrap this up and see where Janet ended up. If you recall, I said earlier in the list of happenings that we had, we spoke about a neighbour that said that they saw Janet levitating horizontally in her room the neighbor was looking through the window from the street. Well, I came across this little clip of Peggy's brother, so Janet's uncle, who lived a few doors down the street, and a story he had to tell about the activity that he witnessed. So if you take a look at this, Chris, and tell me if you feel like there's any kind of link here between the levitating story and this? Could this be a bit of an explanation for what the neighbour may have seen?
Now, what happened in this bedroom?
Well, I heard a noise downstairs. I come up, and there was the eldest girl on the floor. But the other one's missing. So I look under this bed, I look under this one, and as I stand up, I see it. There she is, across this radio, one leg in the air, and her head hanging down. Just to prove that I wasn't mad, I yelled for my wife to come up to see what I have just seen. But she was asleep.
That gentleman who just gave a brief tour of the girl's room, was he a neighbour?
That's Janet's uncle. He lives a few doors down.
Oh, okay, so that right. Okay, so that explains why he's in the house. I was thinking this was a neighbor that saw this and was like, "Oh, well, I'm just gonna have to barge into this young girl's room and just see what's going on for myself."
So basically, it's like a set of drawers with like an old timey big sort of radio on it, and she was laying over the radio apparently in this really weird position. When I saw that clip, I was thinking, in another situation, the neighbor looked through the window and saw her levitating horizontally. Could it not be that they just pushed the drawers in front of the window and had her lay over the radio in that long night dress she always wore, and then she's just going, I'm levitating, right? Don't you just think they could have been doing silly things like that? Because that seems like the perfect height for it, to put that in front of the window and just start to play one of your tricks. Like, I just feel like everything's kind of explainable.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. That's definitely a serious option here. One thing I would say, though, is they would have to be fairly sure that the neighbor was going to be looking up there. That's a difficult thing to coordinate. Unless, as I speculated, he was a dirty old man.
It was a woman.
Dirty old woman.
Yeah, but honestly, I think that they were probably like, they were doing this 24/7. It's not like they had phones or like PlayStations or Xbox. Like, this was probably their life for like 2 years. They're like, all right, we're doing the ghost thing. People are coming to see us. Let's just, they're probably constantly just thinking of new things to come up with. And I honestly think they've done that before. If you push the furniture, like, they're always moving the furniture around, or the poltergeist is.
Yes.
You know, like, it would flip tables, it would flip couches, and people would say, oh, an 11-year-old or a 13-year-old girl could never do that. It's like, two 11 to 13-year-old girls together could flip a couch, I'm pretty sure, and a table. Come on.
Yeah, I'm well, definitely a table they could. I mean,
come on. Yeah, I mean, it's not impossible, is it?
It all depends on the size and weight of the table, but
it looked pretty flimsy in the pictures. It wasn't exactly a solid, like, oak table or anything. I just feel like when people say this is impossible, that's impossible, oh, they're just two young girls, it's like, come on, they can flip a table.
Yeah. I mean, children are a lot more resourceful than you think they are. You can't just dismiss things
100%
out of hand because they're children. But I mean, to be honest, all of this, the most compelling evidence is that voice.
Yes, I agree. It's just so, I mean, it's possible, I'm sure, but it's just so creepy. It's really creepy.
Yeah.
To see it come out of such a young, like, little girl, even if she's just doing it, you know, it's just still very creepy.
Yeah, definitely.
And I don't think in a controlled environment, I doubt all these, like, alleged paranormal experiences could be recreated. I think it's likely the environment and the story makes the mind kind of attribute the supernatural to, like, these events that people were describing. Because if it wasn't a haunted house story and stuff, and you were just in a blank room, and you heard, like, someone going, woof, or something, you'd be like, the hell?
Yeah.
You wouldn't necessarily be like, oh my God, it's a ghost. On a serious note, though, being part of the Enfield haunting really had an effect on Janet. Mm-hmm. Like, her childhood was in no way normal, and she was bullied at school as a result of all the media attention. As an adult, she chose not to do many interviews, and she appears really nervous and anxious when you do see her. But she just looks so nervous and, you know, like she didn't really want to talk about it. Mm-hmm. And I know we always approach these cases in, like, a lighthearted way, but we do have to remember that there were real children involved and they had a rough time because of it. So we just want to say that we're not making fun of anyone's, like, struggles here or anything.
No, definitely not.
And yeah. And Janet did suffer some losses and things. And she maintains to this day that the haunting was real. And she said, if you could read this, Chris.
It lived off me, off my energy. Call me mad if you like. Those events did happen. The poltergeist was with me. And I feel that in a sense. He always will be. Was there a definitive end to this case? Because you have the mother continued living there. But did the paranormal activity stop? Once the girls moved out, did it stop well before then?
They didn't really stop. They died down a bit, but people say it happened from 77 to 79 because that's kind of when it was mainly investigated. But according to the members of the Hodgson family, they always felt there was a presence there. They always felt they were being watched. And it did die down a bit, but it never truly went away. So it did continue.
Well, that is terrifying and also not terrifying at the same time. It
that's how I feel.
Call it as it is here. If there wasn't that voice on camera, this wouldn't be particularly scary. You'd put it all down to the girls playing pranks, especially as they were caught doing it. So it's all down to that voice. It's all down to what was happening on camera, where you could see the voice coming from this girl. So that's just still not quite enough.
I've had fun on this episode, though. I mean, trying to do the Bill voice and trying to do it with a mouthful of water. Hilarious.
Yeah, hilarious. I mean, I've absolutely, as you can probably hear right now, completely wrecked my voice.
I'm so sorry. But this will be good for your upcoming episode as we get nearer Halloween.
Yes, definitely. And it will be my episode next time. But before we talk about that, I want to say thank you for highlighting a lot of things about this case that I didn't know. It is a very famous case, but I didn't know everything about it.
Same.
This is a very interesting case. And I'm very interested as well to hear what all of our listeners have to think. Do you think that this is real or is it a hoax? Are you falling on our side of the fence or were you convinced by those recordings of Bill? Oh, also, I have to say, a mutual friend of ours, give you a shout out, Ben. I hope you're doing well wherever you are in Europe right now. He's walking across Europe from London to Rome, barefoot. He's not barefoot.
I was going to say, I don't remember that being part of it.
But he's walking from London to Rome and he said he's been listening to our podcast. He's been enjoying it. So,
oh, awesome. Hey, Ben.
Good luck, mate. Off you go. But he also said that he didn't live too far from the Battersea site. So when he returns back to London, he's going to go and investigate down there. Although obviously the house isn't there.
But thanks, Ben. And I hope you're doing good as you listen to this. Have a beer for us. And good luck on the rest of your trip.
So thanks very much, Lynn, for presenting this case. We will see all of you listeners again next time. Do anything that you can to help us out. Obviously, the biggest thing you can do is join a Patreon, but just as impactful for us as if you tell somebody about our podcast, recommend it. We are growing. We're getting there. We're getting more listeners all the time, but we want more, damn it. So bring them to me. And next time,
your voice.
Next time, it will be one of my stories. If my voice has repaired itself, otherwise you might just get an AI version of me. Next time, a little bit of you makes me your man. Mambo number 5.
Bye.
I mean, bye.
Oh God, I've just had a flashback to that horrible time you read the entire lyrics to that Insane Clown Posse song and you wouldn't stop and you just kept reading them and reading them and reading them, and it was about 4 minutes of a monologue of you reading those lyrics.
But you know.